You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of December 20th, 2023. And if you show me the champion of light, I'll show you the herald of darkness.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Abor.
My name is Scott Jester.
And this is a serious bundle of humorless conversation about video games. We are wrapping up the year quickly. We have a full slate ahead of us. Today we're talking about Alan Wake 2. We wanted to do a full debrief, full spoilers, which we'll get into later in the episode. I think this game deserves that extra attention. It may or may not appear in one of our Games of the Year lists, so we'll get to that. Speaking of Games of the Year, next week, the Gameys.
The Gameys.
Just when you were like, man, I missed Jeff Keighley and the Game Awards. We got another set of Game Awards for you. The Gameys, one of the highlights of the year. We will do that, followed by our Game of the Year at the very beginning of next year, I guess, technically. Yep. We'll talk about our top games of the year. I think it's going to be a fucking wild one.
Oh, yeah.
For our Games of the Year both, list.
Both Gameys and Goaties, I think.
Oh, Gameys and Goaties are going to be wild, yes.
Yeah.
Then we'll do a Leftovers. That's going to be jam-packed because, holy crap, there were a lot of games that were great this year. I've been slamming through some of them recently. Jusant, very good.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And then we will talk about the games coming up in 2024, some of which were pushed from this year. I'm hoping next year's a little bit less insane. From a video game,
I mean,
release.
It was a lot. It was a lot this year. I feel like there could be a big year next year too. Actually, like just thinking about some of the stuff that has either been announced or pushed, or you know, the things that are going to be on the horizon. You know,
yeah, wild times. Yeah. But we are here today.
Yes,
we're in our light space / dark space. Let's talk
about
Alan Wake 2.
My podcaster's room.
Where did we leave off? So we did a short Alan Wake 2 debrief. I think both you and I had played a little bit of it. We were really enjoying it. Thought it was wild and ghost places.
I feel I may have started it and then I was like, maybe you should play it. And we might have left it off there, actually. I don't know if I heard
your thoughts on it. Oh, if we even talked about it? Oh, yeah. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. And we should get into spoilers. Is there anything you want to say before we get into spoilers? Because I think there's a lot of mechanical spoilers in the game. I think maybe not a lot of them. A lot of narrative spoilers that we'll talk about. I will say right off the bat, I think this is one of my favorite games of the year.
Yeah.
I think it goes balls out.
Oh, yeah.
I think in a year where there's so many games and it's hard to decide what are the ones that stand out, it is always going to help you if you shoot for the stars. Right?
Yes.
And I take the same approach when I think about cinema as well, right? Like there are movies, let's say a biopic, right, where it could be fine, it could be a good movie, but if it doesn't really do anything to stand out of the norm, I'm never going to give it much consideration because it doesn't take risks.
Yeah.
But if you do a biopic and it's super fucking weird, right, I might give it a lot more credence. This is a terrible comparison, but something like Oppenheimer, right? Like Christopher Nolan doesn't fuck around, right? Yeah. So he didn't just make like a paint by numbers biopic about Oppenheimer, although sometimes it certainly feels that way and he can't write women to save his life. But
but he can have really mumbly dialogue and super intense music.
Exactly, dude. And he can make bright lights happen and the atom bomb going off feels crazy, right? Like so there's something to say for just pushing it to the limit. And this is a game that absolutely pushes it to the limit in multiple ways. In its ability to allow you to control which character you're following at any given moment and yet have the stories intersect. Yeah. I think it's a really interesting and daring attempt at giving us some control over how the story takes place, which, again, is fucking fascinating in a game that's fundamentally about how people tell stories and make sense of them, right?
Yeah.
I think we talked about the FMV being daring as well, because it is fully sincere, right? Like, they fully believe the transition from full FMV live action into gameplay.
Yeah.
And it happens seamlessly and it happens quickly, right? Like, you will see the actor who plays Alan Wake. Somebody's got some weird Finnish name, like Ilka.
Yeah, Ilka. Yeah.
we see him on set, and then immediately the camera turns around and you are just a digital version of Alan Wake playing through the game. That happens all the time.
Yep.
And the game doesn't bat an eye, and so I don't bat an eye. And it's daring in that way, right?
Yeah.
Even in the scale of the story that it's trying to tell, I think in the ability to be... have a serious tone and actually be about some things. Like, it actually manages, I think, sometimes successfully and sometimes not successfully, to not be up its own ass too much, right? Like, to rein it in sometimes when it has something to say. And for all of those reasons, this just stands out as a game this year that just tried harder than so many others, right? To push the boundaries of what our expectations are from a single player story driven game. And for that, like, I have to give it all the credit.
I agree. I think this is one of those games where, maybe this is like a preview of a gamey category, but it's one of those games where I really, really enjoyed it. And I would be not surprised at all if someone loved it. And I would not be surprised at all if someone hated it. Because it is one of those, it is one of those games that has such a clear vision about the artistic statement that it's trying to make. I mean, put aside, like, you may or may not like the gameplay, or you may or may not like the directorial choices, or, you know, the acting or the artistic style or whatever, but it feels like nothing in this game is an accident.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so, like, you just have to give it that prop where it's like, this feels like something you can never, you know, the
way copy paste, like, nothing feels like it's just, this was the safe thing to do based upon what we've seen other games do.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the closest thing you get is, like, it had been a long time since I had played such a traditional survival horror game, which I think at its base, the minute to minute interactive part of this game is like very much in the vein of the original Resident Evil series, to the point where I had to kind of remind myself at some points, hey, I actually shouldn't be fighting all these enemies. Like, I should be running, which is something that most survival horror games have gotten away from. And it's something that I kind of had to retrain my mind, you know, back into that mindset. And once I did, I was like, oh, actually this game is working a lot better mechanically now that I've kind of relearned the old habits versus, you know, the newer style.
I don't know, like, the first time you fire the crossbow and then go to reload it, and you're like, holy shit.
You're like,
I feel like a 16th century archer trying to, like, re-quiver my arrow. It's insane.
But I agree with you around the style. And the more I played the game, the more I started to realize, you know, I guess I haven't done the full analysis on this, but I would hazard to guess that if you looked at how they use FMV, they use it in such a way that it's so smart where, like, when the game is telling the story, when something quasi-supernatural is happening, or when something psychic is happening, or when something kind of in the dark place is happening, they use the FMV to, like, demark that, where it's like, I know when the FMV starts, or when I see a flash of FMV on top of the game, which, by the way, I think this game does the best integration of FMV and gameplay at the same time. It's constant too. Like, they're just constantly doing it. They use the FMV purposefully to, like, give you some delineation between what is the fantastical and what is the grounded. And hilariously, they use the FMV for the fantastical, but it looks more real because it's shot with real people, not digital. But they're making a commentary because the real people are represented by the digital avatars, and the freakishness is represented by the actual humans, which I think is just, like, a great little touch in most of those scenes. Yeah.
And I think it works especially well with all of the Alan Wake scenes, of which there are many that take place on the late night show desk, because there's I mean, again, I think this game is really smart. There's this artificiality to the late night show setup that we all know and expect, right? Like the faux city backdrop that is on all late night television show desks. We know it's fake. We know that's not the city backdrop, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of the guise that we choose to believe to get us to understand this is taking place here, right? There's a live studio audience, but canned laughter, and they're all encouraged to like laugh at the right moments and clap at the right moments. Like all of those elements, I think, add to this strange feeling from the real world moments, because it's not as though you get transported to a real life FMV and you were in a safe space. Like, you know right away, you were in a transitional space, in a space of disjuncture, right? When you come out of the FMV from the late night show host, and then you're exploring the back rooms of an abandoned TV set, like that, it feels as though you were entering a space that shouldn't be there, or a space that's between two fictionalized things, which is quite literally what it is in the context of a late night television show.
Yeah.
And I think it works wonderfully in that way.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, all of that stuff is, it's just very well realized. And for the scope too, like, it's well realized, where it's telling a story that is, you know, it's not necessarily, I've heard you talk about this a lot with like the Marvel stuff, where like the Marvel stuff is like galaxy ending problems constantly. But every once in a while, they do a show that is like a localized problem, you know, like Spider-Man has to deal with the neighborhood problem, you know. And this is similar, where it's like, it, you know, clearly something bad is happening, but it's so grounded in the characters and grounded in the setting that they choose, that they scope it to a point where you just get to know these places and these characters. And it's like, this is an extreme event that's happening, but in this area, you know, it's like the stakes are different because they're localized stakes. It's not some like a galaxy quest that you're constantly on and you'd be on in a lot of other video games.
Yep. Agreed. Man. There's a horror element that I want to call out that I really like, specifically the scenes with Alan Wake, where you will be looking for basically like plot moments or devices that take place in a story that you then use to transition a scene from one moment to another.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a form of like time travel in a way, right?
Yeah.
Like, the story has been written, and he'll choose a phrase like the devil or the ritual, and the room will sort of flutter and change. And then you are now in that time space, free to explore. And there's a lot of puzzles that are fundamentally about using that mechanic to solve the puzzle and look at things from a different perspective and gain access to rooms that are blocked in one timeline, but not in another.
Yep.
So I think that stuff is really cool. But what I think is especially neat is the way they use that mechanic to create this really strong sense of like unease and disquiet, right? Because you will transition into a scene, and maybe the devil is the great example. There's a sequence that takes place in a hotel where there's been like multiple murders.
Yeah.
And you're in like a cafeteria, and it's already a fucking spooky cafeteria. Like, no one is there. There's a bunch of wooden chairs or whatever. Then you flash by entering this new scene, and it's full of bodies, and there's like fucking blood everywhere. Right. And there's like someone is strapped into a chair, and there's more ghosts. Right.
Yeah.
But the thing that I think is super cool about it is you will transition away, move to another scene, and then you're like, shit, I have to go back to the devil sequence.
Right.
This whole place is fucked. Like, I don't know what's going to happen when I flicker into that other realm. It's not going to be good. It's not going to be safe, you know, like, and so there's this great use of like tension building using the time travel mechanic that I just think works really, really well, because you just don't know what's going to happen. Or maybe you do know and like are trying to gird your loins for the horror you're about to face when you transition to that next moment. And there's a lot of jump scares in this game.
Oh yeah.
One of my good friends, Jordan, he's interesting because he's fascinated by games like this, but is also admittedly and publicly scared to play games like it. And he said, like, that game looks awesome. Are there a lot of jump scares? And I was like, look, my dude, I'm sorry. There are, like, I would not recommend. Yeah. Cause even there are moments where, you know, in the dark place, there are phantoms everywhere and most of them do nothing other than say, wake, Alan, wake, oh, you know, God. Which is spooky. A
great touch. Yeah.
But every now and then one of them will just fucking grab you and slam you to the ground. And it is, you know, it's terrifying, but it manages to sort of weave this like disquiet this uncomfortability. You yeah. still feel like you have a lot of control in these spaces. But per your point about like the survival horror elements of it, it doesn't in a way that feels it is horrifying and unsettling. And but not only because you're running out of ammo, but yeah. because you kind of know you're intentionally putting yourself into these places that are dangerous, right? Yes. It's almost as though like you're looking at a field full of zombies and going, okay, I have to walk through those zombies now, right? Yeah. Like, and that I think is its own kind of class of horror, of knowing what you have to do and then having to do it anyway.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. There was one of those, you jogged my memory of one of the scenes where it was so funny. Like a couple times Hannah was watching me play this game and she's like, I'm gonna have nightmares. And she was like, and she was just like, I'm serious.
Dude, the
like,
wolves? I can't, when the wolves?
I can't watch this anymore. I'm gonna have nightmares. And she's like, why would you play a game like this? And I was like, it's just
like... why would you play a game like this? Yeah, it's fair. But hey, like, fair.
The one that really was the final nail in the coffin was when you are the level where you're in the theater.
Yes. Yep.
And you do one of those plot. One of the narrative elements, the plot devices that changes the scenery, and you change the scenery in the showroom, in the auditorium.
Yep.
And I changed it when I was on the stage. And then when it changed, just,
oh my God,
there was like 50 of the spirits sitting in the audience. And I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, that's amazing. Also, call out to that scene when you switch it. And then they just recorded a whole ass short film for you to watch.
Oh my God. Yes.
Amazing. Absolutely.
I haven't
amazing.
Even watched the whole one because I was like, God, I need to finish this game. Like, I'm really going down yeah. a rabbit hole here. So, like, I need to go back and do it.
I watched for a good, like, 8 minutes and it goes. Like, the actors are there.
I think it's
Auti
like a 20 or 30 minute movie.
Yeah, I think so.
Like...
I think it's like a 20 or 30 minute film. It's pretty buck wild. Talking a lot about Alan Wake stuff, I also still really like the Saga Anderson stuff.
I like her character a lot. I think she's also a good actor. Like, she's a legitimately good actor, where, like, I think most of the other actors are, like, good in a, like, Twin Peaks sort of way. I think she's, like, yeah. actually a good actor, you know?
Yeah, totally agreed. I think that stuff works really well. I think that in the Twin Peaks sort of way, the Ilmo brothers totally work for me. Like, yes. they're weird, they're quirky. Even the twist at the end about them, which we can talk about,
yeah.
to me, like, made sense and was yep. cool, you know? Yep. So, yeah, I thought that was really neat. I think she has a cool story. I think the paranoia of the way that it intersects with her life works really well.
Yeah.
And I think it puts a lot of like, negative light on Alan specifically as a character, yeah. which yeah. I think totally works. And we'll talk
well,
in
the way
that
they end the well. Game pays that off too, you know, yep. like yep. the penance or whatever that has to be paid. Like that stuff was good. I guess, like, before we get into too many spoilers, like, the other thing that I'll say is, like, I have a soft spot for the Sam Lakes of the world, you know, the creative director yeah. over at Remedy and
the auteurs.
Yeah, I clearly have a soft spot for that sort of thing. But, like, this is the game. And again, I really liked Control quite a bit. But, like, yep. this is from a studio that has big swings, some hits, some misses, but, like, always big swings. But when I was playing this game, I felt like this was probably the best realized vision of what Remedy has been trying to do for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was thinking about just, you know, Sam Lake inserts himself in a Kojima-like way in this game constantly. You know, like, his yep. face is constantly in this game. He himself is in this game as himself, but also as Casey. Like, you know, there's just a lot of stuff going on. And it clearly looks like he's having a great time. And I just thought to myself, it's kind of the thing that I admire is, and the thing that I kind of want to pass on even to my kids, which is, go make your art. And if you can convince someone to pay and fund your art, just unapologetically go for what you want to go for. Cause mm-hmm. like, seeing his face in this game, it was the face of someone who was shocked that he was getting funded to do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, he was like, I cannot believe that Epic Games paid for all of this. You know, yeah. it's like, it was just one of those things where it's like, I just got the sense that he could tell he was getting away with something. And
yeah.
like,
yeah.
I just want to pass that along, which is like, don't, like, people might love it or hate it, but, like, do what you want to do and just go full on with it. and try not to compromise. And if someone is going to help you achieve that vision, and again, in a kind of David Lynch sort of way, fuck it. Unapologetically go for what you want to go for.
Was this your answer to Hannah when she asked, why would you play a game like this?
I mean, she was in the room when I was, she was doing some work, and so I was wearing headphones, but that was when I did the chapter, We Sing.
Oh, the musical number?
Yeah. And I was just like laughing and shaking my head and kind of like, you know, giggling the whole time. And she glanced over and then afterwards she was asking me, you know, what the game was. And she was like, yeah, I saw you playing that thing. And I was like, there seems to be some art happening over there. Yeah. And I was like, yes, exactly.
Yeah. I think you're totally spot on. I was actually watching some interviews with Sam Lake earlier this week. And apparently, in between, after he made Max Payne, he went and I don't know if he like got a degree. He took college courses and classes on screenwriting specifically to just get better.
Right.
At storytelling, you know, before coming back to Max Payne 2. Like, this is something this guy likes to fucking do. You know what I mean? And you can see that in the work. And it's great.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe with that, we just like declare full on spoilers from here and just kind of like talk about, you know,
spoilers.
What else is going on? Where do you want to start? Because there's so much here. And by the way, like, I had to dive into the wiki to like kind of like understand some of the plot points and stuff. And like some things did get a lot clearer once I read other, because I didn't pick up every single, you know, clue and every single item and stuff like that. And there's just a huge amount of like extended universe lore here, by the way.
Well, yeah, because like I was reading, I mean, we don't have to get too into the weeds of like crazy conspiracy theories, but like, apparently, Warland, there's a character in Quantum Break played by the late, great Lance Reddick.
And he was acknowledged in the credits, like, as kind of a rest in peace.
I didn't catch that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
We've lost some really great...
He was probably going to be Warland Dorr, it seems like.
Well, so his name in Quantum Break is Martin Hatch.
Oh, my God.
So there is like some theory that he is in
Sam
fact
Porter
Warland
Bridges,
Dorr. Yes,
Die Hard men shit.
Yeah. Also, shout out James McCaffrey died this week, who was the voice of Alex Casey in Alan Wake 2.
Whoa, crazy.
Yeah, he was 65. He had cancer. So,
jeez. Well, I'm glad. I mean, it's hopefully he's getting the recognition that he deserves for this. Like, that's sad to hear.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, the Warland Dorr stuff is wild. I think for me, maybe a good place to start is just from like a high level narrative perspective, going into this, and the way that I described it to some people, and when you said some people will hate it, some people will love it.
Yeah.
When I think about this from like a storytelling perspective, it's kind of like if someone who was really obsessed with both House of Leaves and Nabokov's Pale Fire made a video game, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I love those books. Not everybody loves those books, especially House of Leaves. I think everybody loves Nabokov, but not everybody loves House of Leaves. And the reason is because it can feel very navel-gazy, self-important. It can feel like it's weird and wacky for weird and wacky's sake rather than servicing a narrative end.
It's a very like that and Twin Peaks and just kind of like weird meta, you know, literary commentary type of humanities major stuff, you know?
Exactly. And I think, and to be fair, I think there is an element to this, but, you know, as a pseudo academic by purview of this podcast, maybe that's just what we're into, right? But like, I can understand that perspective. I do think that this game does a lot to salvage themselves from a narrative perspective by actually having a lot of significant weight on the events of both Saga Anderson and Alan Wake's character. Mm-hmm. Specifically, I think I really like how Alan Wake's story arc, specifically with Scratch. Is it Mr. Scratch?
Just Scratch.
Professor Scratch.
Yeah, Dr. Just, Scratch, please.
Just Scratch. Just Scratched you. Mr. Scratch was my father's name. So Scratch as the alter ego of Alan.
Yeah.
Same with Timothy Zane, who's kind of another alter ego of Alan. Thomas Zane, yeah. And there's the story with his wife where she basically has a bunch of videotapes about her being abused, like psychologically and physically, by this other person that Alan calls Scratch.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's, yes, we can take that at face value. Like, okay, Alan Wake is inhabited by this terrifying person and there's another person that's pretending to be his body. But I think on top of that, there's something interesting to explore around the artist taking his art too far. Mm-hmm. That he's got a substance abuse problem. He's violent with his wife, and he's telling a story about himself that salvages that, right? Like, oh, it's not your fault. It's Scratch's fault, right? Yeah. And for a game that is a lot about like the way that we tell stories and what stories we need to tell ourselves in order to validate our existence, I think it's intentionally playing with some of these like uncomfortable moments where, you know, they could draw back the curtain and say, no, Alan Wake is just an alcoholic asshole writer who beats his wife. Like that could be a story, right? Saga Anderson's story could be she drowned her child. Like her child drowned.
Right.
And she blames herself, right? Yeah.
She was a distant mother that didn't pay enough attention to her family and it fell apart.
Exactly. And she was committed too much to her job, just like Alan Wake was committed too much to his writing. And the story that she needs to tell herself is that, no, that's not what happened. This is someone else's story. My daughter is okay.
Yeah.
And that is not entirely clear by the end, right? At the very end of the game, she's on the phone with her daughter, but she doesn't pick up. We don't hear her voice, right?
Have you read about the subsequent New Game Plus that they've released?
No.
Hold on.
Before you get to that, let me just put a pin in this quick thought. Because what I want to say about that is that I think they're by sort of walking that line, I think we're able to sort of like wrestle or think about like the way that stories can lie to us, but also be our safe haven.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's something interesting to play with. But tell me, so New Game Plus, she's alive?
Sorry, this is like jumping way around. Like, I don't mean to derail us a little bit, but they recently, I think as of like a week ago or 2 weeks ago, like they released the New Game Plus feature where, you know how at the end of the game, Alan is like, it's not a loop, it's a spiral.
Yep.
The New Game Plus has new plot elements in it.
Really now? Because it's not a loop. It's a spiral.
Exactly.
Oh, it's so good.
And it doesn't diverge from the overall plot, but there's enough changes that you learn more about what's happening. And Alan seems more aware of what's happening. And you get a little bit further into the characters and you learn a little bit more about the universe. So it's like you're closer to the surface of the dark place as you're spiraling to get out of it, you know? And so anyway, my point is, I think in that New Game Plus, they are more explicit about what happens to Logan, the daughter, because at the end of the first run, it's a classic cliffhanger, you know, kind of Stephen King-esque sort of thing where it's like, oh, what did happen? You know, like they're not going to tell you. But then if you start the loop again, you realize, oh, I actually now learned a little bit more about what did happen. There's still more mysteries, but I have to keep on this spiral until, you know,
is she alive or not?
At the end of the New Game Plus, she picks up. So it's like Saga has like, you can stay on the phone long enough and the game doesn't cut to black. It's like she picks up and then you learn a little bit more about like, oh, maybe Saga and Alan were on the right track with what they were doing, which tells you a little bit more. So like maybe for the next spiral, you can like get a little bit further from the dark
New
place.
New Game
like,
plus.
Yeah. I mean, like it was just like, and that's like really some cool. Characters come back and you like learn new things. Like I think that's also where people picked more up on the whole like Warland Dor thing, maybe being Saga's dad.
Yeah. Well, I got that sense playing the game originally.
Well, he had some funny lines about like, you brought my family into this, you know, blah, blah, blah. And like, there was some throwaway line around like he got in a fight with Saga's grandparents, like Tor and Odin and stuff like that.
Yeah. When she's talking to Tor, she asks about her dad and Tor says something like, some doors are best left closed. And it's like, some door. Well, going back real quick to that amendment too, because again, I think it works by walking that line, because the other read that you can have is that Saga Anderson is just a character in a story, and the story is Remedy's story.
Yes.
And it's Remedy that's putting her daughter at stake, right? Yeah. And like, we don't want to, you know, especially when you just use a child to motivate someone, like, you know, there's kind of culpability on the writer side as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's some cool stuff to explore.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, all of that stuff I think is the other thing too, is in a funny way, like I think Remedy's stuff, because they kind of lean into their cultural heritage more than like, as any game developer does, but it's kind of funny that like, oh yeah, like this, there's like a lot of like weird Norse mythology stuff going on here. And like, there's, you know, Ati the janitor is like making all these weird references and stuff, and like
you never put the button on the dog's bing bag.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. What? Like, I don't know if this is just a Finnish thing or if this is just being weird or both. But like, there's just a lot of stuff that I think is both entertaining but unique that I appreciated in the story.
Agreed. Totally. Totally.
I bounced around a little bit, but at a certain point I was like so compelled by Saga's like, you know, way through the plot that like I got way far ahead, and then I had to do like multiple chapters of Alan in a row to catch up to the end. Yeah. How did you handle the back and forth?
I bounced around quite a bit. Generally, okay. I would like finish Saga's segment, but I found Alan Wake's sections to be much more terrifying, like just genuinely more. Yeah,
I think they were
unsettling.
Scarier for sure.
Yeah, they were scarier. I felt more, I mean, it makes sense, right? Like you're in the dark place. Like there is no respite ultimately. So whenever I was finished with an Alan Wake segment or like halfway through, I would often be like, I need to go check. Right. I'm going to go check on my girl Saga for
a
while.
Yeah, what's Saga up to? She seems competent.
Right. And sometimes I would just mess around and like try to do some of the like nursery rhyme puzzles and stuff before going back to Alan Wake. But I found it to be like a moment of respite. That isn't to say the Saga stuff wasn't scary. Cause they're, I mean, especially the wolves, like they are scary.
Yes.
But, yeah, I thought the Alan Wake 2 stuff was more unsettling.
Yeah, agreed. And it's funny, like, at the end of the game where that the worlds start to merge, where, like, Saga gets sucked into the dark place, and it's like, oh, this is weird. Yeah. Like, I'm not used to her being in this context.
Yeah. Well, they also mentioned only the Dor family can go through certain things, so I feel like her being the child of Warland Dor makes sense.
Oh, that's a good catch. Yeah.
I did spend a lot of time, I don't know about you, but, like, reading a lot of the notes and letters that are on the game.
Yep.
There's some cool stuff, especially around like the old gods of Asgard, which I thought were really cool and worked really well. There's a sequence about Thor and Odin meeting and fighting against the dark presence a long time ago.
Yeah.
And him losing an eye. Yeah. And he says like it was the wrong eye. And then I don't know if you catch it, but like in older versions, the eye patch is on the other eye than where it is in old days, because before he was wearing it as a prop. For his band, but then he lost his eye, which I thought was cool. But that's also great. What's neat is they mention in that, like, oh, well, you know, we always lose an eye. It's kind of like there's always a lighthouse moment, right? Like, you get the sense that not only has a story been retold, but, you know, Thor and Odin are kind of the same. The narrative characters stretch across time and place, right?
Yes.
In the same way that, like, just, you know, theoretically talking about the way that we can use character archetypes to fit in stories no matter what, right? Like Thor and Odin can exist in Alan Wake 2, and even though they're not the god Thor and the god Odin, they kind of are, right? Like they both
the
are
archetypes
and aren't
of that. They're avatars or archetypes of that stuff,
and there's a recognition that they're that through those texts, and I think it makes the world feel more literary, which both destabilizes it from like, okay, what is real and what isn't, and I think adds the kind of the tapestry of like what the overall world building is, right? Because any archetype can kind of be in the space as a result.
Well, and it's like, what is the it blurs the line between what are these characters doing of their own accord versus what are they doing because that's their role to play in this weird cosmic theater that they find themselves in.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Like Thor has to run around with a hammer doing stuff because like that's what Thor does. But how much of that is the character of the old rocker who, you know, would also just trash hotel rooms and stuff like that? You know, it's like there's just kind of, and I think that Alan Wake as a character deals with that stuff a lot, which is like, oh, how much of this is just, am I an archetype of the tortured artist or whatever, versus how much responsibility do I have to actually deal with the shit that I've done in my life or the consequences that I've thrust upon other people with what I've done? Yep. That stuff is good even in the minor characters that they bring in.
Yeah. Speaking of minor characters, I loved the nurse who's obsessed with Alan Wake.
Again, awesome. She's like a super fan, that like a meta fan of Alan Wake as a character, and then all of a sudden he comes to life in front of her. She's like, I've been waiting for you. I set all this stuff up. There's the shoeboxes over there. I'm like, oh my God, this is great.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm like, thank God. Like, I'm glad you're a fucking psycho because I really needed that shoebox.
Right.
Yeah. How did you feel about the Federal Bureau of Control overlap?
I mean, I really liked Control quite a bit, and so I think that, and in many ways, it's just a very modern motion, which is like everything has to be an expanded universe. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I get it, but like, I think the Remedy stuff deserves it and owns it in a certain way, because then it just becomes like, hey, this is just yet another in the countless files in the Federal Bureau of Control, and like this is just a Tuesday for that agent that was, you know, that was dispatched to Bright Falls. You know, like you get the sense that there's agents dispatched everywhere because, you know, Jesse Faden or whatever, who's running the oldest house now, is she's just running this huge bureaucracy, and she has to deal with all these objects of power and all these like AWEs or whatever that are just all around the world. And like, this is just one of those in like a long list of to-dos that they have to deal with. So like, I liked it, you know?
Yeah, I agree. There's an element of like, it's so hard to criticize any single moment because everyone is wacky, right? Yeah. Like where it crosses the line is up to you. The detective, like the Federal Bureau of Control agent, that's where I'm like, okay, maybe this is a little bit too much, but right. I think for the most part, I thought it was cool.
I mean, it'll be telling to see what they do with Control too, because, you know, will the Alan Wake stuff,
the clicker's going to be like in a room somewhere.
Yeah. Like you'll find it, or maybe it will be a bigger deal. Like maybe the, you know, Scratch and all of that other stuff. Like maybe it will be more important to the overall arc of the world and not just an X-File, you know?
I kind of hope it is, because, you know, in the stuff with Timothy Zane and or even the other artists, right? Like the idea that through creating art, you are bringing a reality into the world.
Yeah.
From an artist, especially a video game one, I think that's a really interesting thing to wrestle with.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of Control. Like if the magnum opus is this confluence between Control, maybe Max Payne, I don't know, maybe Quantum Break 2 and Alan Wake, like that feels right to me to be fundamentally about wrestling with art making reality.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I think it's I'm all on board for this type of franchise to have. Like, I don't think everything has to be an extended universe, but I mean, clearly they're saying something more, and the extended universe I think serves this well, which is fine. You know, like if it serves it well and it's part of the overall story, then I totally support it. So but even, you know, even if you didn't know about all that stuff, I think there's still plenty to like understand here and to like. I mean, even the moment to moment stuff, you know, we talked about the musical episode, which is where the game really turned for me, and they put that scene early, and I was like, oh, okay, this game's really going places now. Like this, who knows what we're in store for. And then they kind of finish it off at the end with, they do a version of it for Saga where the old guards of Asgard are playing a song and also like, you know, dispatching zombies with the power of rock and roll while you're like just basically doing a wave based horde mode or whatever, which I also thought was, it's just so great.
It's a similar scene to the first Alan Wake as well.
It is. Same thing, old guards. Yeah. Just what they do with that, and like they overlay the FMV in the sky, so you're kind of seeing, you know, like the real version of the old gods of Asgard in the heavens or whatever while you're, you know, dealing with the zombies. Like there's just some really smart stuff that they do in a very technically slick way that just feels like a very well realized version of this type of game design.
Yep, totally.
I wish I had more time to, like, you know, do a new game plus, do more of the reading and watch a whole 30-minute short film with, you know, all of the stuff. But like, you know,
they should have let you like press so X much. To sit in one of the theater chairs and like get a popcorn.
It would be so funny if they, I mean, because really what you have to do is you have to go back or like, you know, listen to all the songs, like the songs in between chapters, which by the way is like a very Kojima thing as well, where it's like everything is a chapter, there's like a theme song to every chapter,
so many chapters. Yeah,
but like so many of the songs are just like literally telling the story of the game, the and like all of the lyrics and stuff are like just very amusingly tied to what's going on. Like there's just so much here to dig into if you have the time and the willingness to go in there And if not, like the wikis are just having a field day with all the connections that could be made.
Yeah, agreed. And especially, again, a game where art makes reality, songs that are telling the story make perfect sense.
Yes.
Totally works. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it just, again, in a very, like, everything makes sense in the context of the game in a very, like, Twin Peaks sort of way, where it's like, yes, it's absurd, but, like, the entire world of this is absurd. And so you can absorb it and it can stand by itself because it's just so confident in how weird it is.
Yep. Agreed. Totally agreed. Well, I'm glad it stood out to you too. I wasn't sure like how you would find it.
Yeah.
No, we don't really play a whole lot of survival horror games these days anymore.
There's not really that many, especially that are super traditional. And honestly, I've never really played the first Alan Wake game that much. And
same.
Which is so funny because I feel like this game has been like pretty much critically universally praised, and it kind of relies on that first game quite a bit. Like I was reading about all the stuff that was happening and I was kind of glad they did the whole musical interlude because I was like, oh, cool. This is giving me a crash course on like what happened in Alan Wake 1. Like this is actually useful to me. But they just kind of go with it. You know, like they don't really apologize too much for just expanding on the universe that they set up in that first game. Yeah,
great.
All right, well, I guess we'll wrap it up there. We'll be back with game of the year stuff soon enough, but experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address,
and experiencepoints.net is the website. You can listen to Scratch, who is actually recording all these older podcasts. It's finally me now, thank you, I'm back. Wherever you find podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, you know, places.
All right. Until next time, everyone, thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Ciao.